There's a lot of people who might think that the title of this video is a joke. How to blame other people for your problems. But I assure you that it's not a joke. And I'm telling you that you should blame other people for your problems. Because I'm a realist. I don't buy into psychobabble. I don't buy into this whole modern psychology thing that says that actions have no consequences and that effects have no causes. This is ridiculous. And yet, I'm also a champion of personal responsibility. You may think that these two things oppose one another. You would be wrong. I will explain, as I always do. This is going to help you understand yourself. It's going to help you cope with life, and especially with your sin. That's the ultimate purpose here, is I'm going to make a huge point about sin. Now, let's say a man comes into the room and he's limping horribly. He's very stiff-legged. He's walking like the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz, and you say to him, "Oh, why are you walking like that?" And the guy says, "Well, I was in Vietnam, you know, and the VC jumped us, and they killed a bunch of my buddies, and they took me to a hut, tied me to a table, and cut my legs off." And the modern psychologist would say, "You stop blaming other people for your problems." And the guy said, "Look, you asked me why I was walking the way I am, and that's why." The guy's not complaining about it. He's just giving you the facts. He points to the Viet Cong and say, "They did it to me." It's true. Or someone comes into the room just horribly disfigured. "Oh my gosh, how come you look like that?" "Well, I was sleeping one night and someone set fire to my house, an arsonist, and I was burned over 50% of my body, especially my face." Stop blaming the fire. Stop blaming the arsonist. Take responsibility for your own actions. Let's consider emotional problems. Let's say someone is morose, or it seems like life has kicked them. And you might inquire as to the source of their disposition. This person says, "Well, my wife of 30 years left me, abandoned our family." Dude, stop blaming your wife. Stop blaming. I'm just telling you the facts. You asked me why I'm behaving the way I am. That's why. Why are you walking the way you walk? The Viet Cong cut my legs off. Why are you so disfigured? Someone set fire to my house. Why are you a little down? Well, my wife just left me. Now, if either one of these people in these three scenarios was not taking personal responsibility, for instance, the guy in Vietnam, he would still be laying there with no legs, or he'd still have no legs, and he'd be cursing the Viet Cong every day. "Goddamn Viet Cong, frickin' war, goddamn Johnson, whatever." But he's not. In fact, the guy went to the VA, or let's say he went to some real hospital, and he went through a horrible procedure where he, you know, a tough procedure of rehab, has prosthetics on his legs. The guy has taken personal responsibility, but he's never going to walk right. Why are you limping? The Viet Cong did it. Quit blaming the Viet Cong. That's what happened. They did it. Same with the guy with the fire. Yeah, he goes to the hospital. He goes through the entire protracted, awful treatment of getting his burns healed, but it's never going to completely fix the guy. He's scarred for life. I know many people with emotional scars who had bad childhoods. They had fathers that weren't present, or worse, they had fathers that abused them, or mothers. And they're screwed up for life. They don't sit around blaming their parents all day. I know people who have been totally screwed up by their parents, and yet they don't hold any grudge against their parents, but they have an uphill battle their whole life because they're screwed up because of their parents. Why are you a little screwed up? It's because of my parents. Stop blaming other people. Let's be realists. You should blame other people for your problems. I don't have to teach you how to, because it comes naturally. What doesn't come naturally is artificially contriving some sort of mindset that you operate in a vacuum of no influence, and that whatever happened to you, it's your own fault. It's not that guy. That's how far modern psychology has taken this, in that you're responsible for everything. Personal responsibility. They've taken it to extreme and unhealthy lengths so that people can't even pass the buck anymore. Of course you can pass the buck. Adam did it in the Garden of Eden. What have you done? Well, the woman that you gave me, it's her fault. God never scolds him for that. God says, yeah, it's reasonable. So then he turns to the woman. What do you have to say for yourself? Adam said it was your fault. Well, I was doing fine, and then the serpent came along, and the serpent deluded me. Does God say to Eve, take personal responsibility for your problems? No, he didn't say it to Adam either. Well, the woman that you gave me. Adam, quit blaming others. Quit trying to blame other people for your problems. No. Eve was directly to blame. Well, not directly, but in Adam's world, yes, directly. The woman you gave me, she did it. God says, fair enough. Turns to the woman. Well, the serpent did it. Well, fair enough. See, God's not a modern psychologist. He realizes there are causes and effects in this world. He realizes that things get screwed up for a reason, and that the people who are screwed up, it's not ultimately their fault. I mean, if you jump off a 5-story building to make a cool video that you hope will go viral, and you break your legs that way, yeah, then you're stupid. But there really are victims. Now, I'm not a victim mentality guy, because some people just play that card. None of the people in my example are playing the card. Adam's not writhing on the ground, never getting up, never coming back, all because of the woman. He's not letting it define him. But if you ask him, why'd you do that? She did it. Why you disfigured? The arsonist. Why are you limping? The VC. Why are you drinking? My wife left me. Okay, fair enough. And then God turns to the serpent. Because you did this, you're going to crawl on the ground. So, everybody suffers consequences, but everybody has an out. And I can't figure out why the serpent didn't say, well, God made me this way. God, you yourself created me to be an adversary. Could have done that. That would have been a good play. Would have been a good card at that time. Now let's talk about sin. Paul gives us all a really great buck-passing technique in Romans chapter 7. I recommend this to you. I'm going to tell you how to do it. I'm going to show you how to do it. I'm going to relieve you of personal responsibility. This should help you. It should. Romans 7:15, Paul says, he's talking about the fact that he sins and he can't seem to get out of it. He says, "For I am affecting what I know not. For not what I will, this I'm putting into practice, but what I'm hating, this I am doing." Has anybody besides me experienced this kind of thing? "Now, if what I'm not willing, this I'm doing, I'm conceding that the law is ideal. Yet now it is no longer I who am affecting it, but sin making its home in me." This is a beautiful thing. Paul says, it's no longer I who am affecting this. This thing operating in me, it's no longer I who am doing it, but it's sin making its home in me. And the Concordant Version capitalizes sin, capital S-I-N, sin making its home in me. God might turn to sin. Okay, why did you do this to this poor guy? Sin says, wow, it was death. Death is the problem, because no one sins unless they're dying. God turns to death. What have you done here? It goes back to the first sin, doesn't it, in the Garden of Eden. But what does that go back to? It goes back to God. Now, I'm not one where you sit around or lie on the ground writhing, considering yourself to be unable to help yourself, because you are able. If you ask me, "Martin, I'm really thinking about robbing a bank this afternoon. There's a bank, the First National Bank out there on Walnut, and it really seems vulnerable. I notice that the guard goes to lunch at a certain time, and the afternoon shift is really kind of careless. What do you think? Should I rob the bank?" I'm going to tell you, no, don't rob the bank. The guy's laying in the field. The guy's laying on the table, having gotten his legs chopped off by the Viet Cong. What should I do? I would go along with the rescue operation that's coming for you. I would go to a hospital. I would get prosthesis. I would go through rehab. I would work hard, get your fake legs, and do the best you can. Of course, that's what I tell the guy. I tell the guy they got burned. You know, try to get it cleaned up. Do the best you can. I tell the guy whose wife left him after 30 years of marriage, I say, look, go find somebody else. You know, take up a hobby, do something. And yet you're going to be scarred for life. We as sinners have been scarred for life. And we can encourage one another to do our best, but it's only going to take us so far, people. It's only going to take us so far. And the deliverance Paul talks about at the end of Romans 7 is not a deliverance where you get rid of your sin. It's a deliverance where you no longer let that sin condemn you. You no longer let that sin identify you. It's still to blame, and Paul doesn't even flinch from naming sin as the problem. It's not me, sin operating in me. What do you want me to do? Not sin? The issue in Romans 7, Romans really 6, 7, and 8 is not sinning. That's not the issue. The issue is not how to keep from sinning. The issue is, now that you're a sinner, how do you relieve yourself of the potential guilt and the self-condemnation that you drag around every day? This, you realize the grace of God. That's what Paul gets to at the end of Romans chapter 7. What will rescue me out of the body of this death? This is verse 24. Grace. I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Consequently, then I myself with the mind and indeed am slaving for God's law, yet with the flesh for sin's law. So nothing has changed in his flesh. This is the startling thing about the end of Romans 7. Nothing has changed with Paul's flesh. He's still sinning, but he's got a different law operating in his mind. He's thinking in a different way. But while he's thinking in a different way, he's not being stupid about it and saying and assuming that he lives or thinking that he lives in a vacuum where there's no cause and effect. And this is what I recommend against. Of course there's cause and effect. You're a sinner because sin is operating in you. You're mortal because Adam has passed mortality through to you. And you are a mess because your dad didn't love you. Or your uncle raped you. These are facts. Your parents divorced and you never had a stable childhood. You're always going to struggle against that. And you can point to that and say, they did it. Yes, they sure as hell did. They can keep passing the buck. I know it comes back to God ultimately, doesn't it? And that's the relief here. But I want to make sure you understand that the relief does not mean we lay down like helpless, inert blobs of vanilla pudding and don't do anything about it. I'm just against the extremes. I'm against not blaming people. And I'm against not doing anything about your situation. I'm usually more extreme, aren't I? I usually go, whoa, this way or whoa, that way. But in this case, I see both things. This brings a measure of peace in two different ways. It brings you a measure of peace in that you no longer condemn yourself for your sin. And it brings you a measure of peace to know that, you know what? It's not your fault.